Listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. I hope everything is well with you today. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a chance to do all the things that you wanted to do, needed to do, should do, better do, must do, can do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, yes, that's right. You did it anyway, because that's the kind of brother or sister that you are. You always get things done. So Ashe. It is a great morning. A great day to honor and celebrate African womanhood from ancient to modern, or from past to present. And my guest, of course, today will be my dear brother, Baba Ronoka Rashidi, Dr. Ronoka Rashidi, who is a primary researcher. Primary researcher means that they go out. They just don't look it up. They just don't Google it. They go out and physically look at the evidence, physically look at people, artifacts, land, so forth. And with millions of miles that he has traveled around this world documenting the African presence. He has sat at the feet of the greatest warrior scholars that has been produced, Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Chancellor Williams, Dr. Chancellor Williams, many others. So we're honored to have him today. He will be in the 12 o'clock hour. And but before then, we'll talk about our sisters and the contributions that they have made and continue to make. And without them, where would we be? Man, huh? Where would we be? African Perspectives is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. And if you can't listen live, you can go to our archive. Just go to timeforanawakening.com, timeforanawakening.com, or blacktalkradionetwork.com. And put in African Perspectives, and the programs are titled and dated. So you can listen to the program that you would like to listen to, or one that you may have missed or wanted to do some research on, or whatever is there for you. And thanks to my good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku, we appreciate that. Also today on Time for an Awakening Radio, or Time for an Awakening Media, we have Acres of Diamonds at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. All times given are Eastern times. Right after that, for 1 hour, from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365. You can also view it on Facebook or YouTube. I can't remember which one. Tuesday, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesday evening from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. I'm looking forward to the program tomorrow, believe me. Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Revive. Thursday, Ulu, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And it was an honor to have Baba Akima on the program this past Friday talking about the Power Summit. And in fact, let me finish this, and then I'm going to go to the Power Summit because I just want to talk about that. So I'll finish the rundown, and then we'll put some emphasis on Us Lifting Us. Friday, if it is Friday, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, that's right, it's time for an awakening. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Outstanding guests he has and enlightening conversation. So check him out every Friday from 8 p.m. to until. Because sometimes he goes a little over, but 8 to 11, something like that. Saturday, Sports Talk, SST. Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it's not Brother Oshi in African Perspectives from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. It is Sister POC Revive on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also, too, the Republic of New Africa. Is having a conference March 29th, the end of this month, to April 1st, which is Sunday, April 1st, which is, of course, Easter Sunday, and also April Fool's Day. Bunch of fools. Yeah, especially those who, never mind. Anyway, Republic of New Africa, I'll get my good brother Jamoke in here to talk about the Republic of New Africa in the next week or so to make sure that we get all of the good information where it's going to be held in Detroit. It's going to be in Detroit and all the activities that are going to be happening. So, went to the mall last week, ran into a brother named Lamar. He is with We Buy Black, WeBuyBlack.com. Check him out, WeBuyBlack.com. They had a kiosk in the mall with some good products that are produced by us and sold by us, and so that's what needs to happen. Okay, get everything you need. Get everything we need from us, American African-owned businesses. So go to their website, WeBuyBlack.com. Also, the conference that I can't wait to happen, April 14th, right here. Yeah, I can't wait to happen because I'm going to be out of town. I just realized I'm going to Baltimore. I want to go to this conference. I'm going to Baltimore. Oh, man, just realized it. I'm going to Baltimore for a conference. I made my reservations and everything already. Sometimes I tell you, when you get old, you just, man, is that right? Well, hey, I'm going to continue to promote it because you need to be here in Atlanta. It is the Survival Conference. The 21st Century Survival Conference, April 14th, Saturday, April 14th, Spirituality, Culture, and Survival. The spirituality component will be handled by Oshawa Kwesi, the master teacher, and he will deal with African history and spirituality, the origins of the Bible and Quran. The cultural component will be held by my good friend and brother, Baba Mwalimu Baruti, a warrior's character, talking about what is a warrior, what kind of character should a warrior have. And then Survival will be Irritated Genie of Straight Black Pride. Irritated Genie, African Survival in the 21st Century. Doors open up at 12 noon at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. For more information, you can contact information. You can go to the Gmail, SBPM Atlanta@gmail.com. So you can check them out. All right. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. And we are having our Power Summit this week. Also, too, this week in Philadelphia, the ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, is also having their conference this weekend in Philadelphia. ASCAC, which is an organization that I love and admire, the many men and women who are members of ASCAC. although I've stated at many conferences, and if I was there this weekend, I would state it again. ASCAC needs to be the educational arm of our liberation by ASCAC members, those scholars and so forth, producing a curriculum for study for our young people as well as for adults that could be administered across this country, just like the damn Baptist church. At the Baptist church, they have a Sunday school lesson. And this is the lesson that will be taught in Sunday schools on the Sunday. That day is dated. And that's what's going to be taught across the country in that church. We need that kind of concept, that this is the lesson that will be taught on this day, Friday or Saturday, whatever that day is, in centers, in churches, in whatever venues we can, hell, people's homes, whatever. We need information. We need liberating education. You can still send your kids to these schools that fail you, that fail us, to get the best knowledge of science, math, and architecture. to get the best language, math, so forth and so on. But the information, the cultural information, that is our responsibility. The knowledge itself is our responsibility. And so therefore, ASCAC could do that. ASCAC could produce that. And that's what needs to happen. So last year I went to New Orleans for ASCAC, but this year instead of going to Philadelphia, and believe me, I really wanted to, but I'm going to be here for Us Lifting Us, ULU, our power summit. We have some people, interesting people across the country. It's this Friday and Saturday. Friday is a welcoming reception at the cafe. That's right. Cafe ULU is open. And if you want to know more about Cafe ULU, go to the website, CAFEULU, CAFEULU.com, Cafe ULU, and you can check it out. We have coffee. We're going to be known for coffee here in the Atlanta area. We're going to be a true coffee house. We have coffee from Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, Brazil. We have coffee. We have pastries and some smoothies and some wraps, some kale salad. But the bottom line is coffee and tea. The tea is a company that there in Atlanta. In fact, everything that is at Cafe ULU is us. There's some. We even sell potato chips that are produced by us here in Atlanta. Everything is us. Independent bakers and so forth. Everything. So if you love to support ourselves, you need to be a constant member of Us Lifting Us, but you need to visit Cafe ULU. If you're in the Atlanta area, 2036 Sylvan Road, 2036 Sylvan Road, 30310. You can call, too, if you want to call in to get your order, so you can just come and pick it up if that is the case, 470-788-8124, 470-788-8124. And we're talking about Cafe ULU. And so Friday, we will have a meet and greet at Cafe ULU at 7 p.m. for members who are coming in from the Atlanta area or from out of town or even out of the country, for those who are coming. And you're going to have a visitor and so forth on Friday. Saturday, we'll have a members meeting at Cafe ULU. But then Saturday afternoon, we will go to the Atlanta Technical College, Atlanta Technical College on Metropolitan Boulevard, and that's where we have the Power Summit. We will open the Power Summit up. Our good sister from the Denver area, Sister Nanana, and myself, I will do a libation. Like I say, we will start exactly at 2 o'clock because we don't have that much time, and I'm quite sure we're contracted. So, and then the first presentation will be Brother DJ. Brother DJ will do a ULU presentation. And then Anthony Rice, with BEES. BEES stands for, it's the acronym BEES stands for Black Economic Empowerment System. Brother Anthony Rice will be the next presenter. And then Brother Ken from the cafe will do a presentation about the cafe and things that we're doing. We'll have a break at that time. And then cultural expressions. The sister will do some cultural expressions, probably some spoken word and so forth. And then a discussion about Bitcoin. Jacqueline Ulrich, a discussion about Bitcoin. There's been a lot of information. I'm really anxious to hear this and how it really, really is. And if it's real, well, we'll find out. And believe me, if you know me, I'll be back here on Monday after the conference this weekend, and I will tell you what went down, how great it was, and some of the things that you missed, you couldn't be there. But, hey, listen, you can go when you go to our website, you can check it out over the Internet. That's right. You can see it, not just hear it. You can see it. The next presenter is Brother Peter Brown, the Ledge Group. And the Ledge Group, they, as Baba Kima explained it, they are in Africa. They are doing the work. You got land. If you got land, you want to do something with it, the Ledge Group will help cultivate that land, grow things on that land, take it to harvest and so forth. The Ledge Group, come and check them out. And then Rashid Neary, Brother Neary is dealing with urban gardening, urban agriculture, urban agriculture. My good friend in Milwaukee, you know, he has been an urban farmer for many, many years and even had a store and so forth. And unfortunately, he is no more. And that's because of lack of support. We'll have another break. Then we'll come up with a panel discussion. And our good sister Nanana will be the moderator for the panel of the people who I just mentioned. And then Baba Kimbizi will close us out. That's the activity of Ulu, and we really appreciate all the brothers and sisters and the people who are coming from out of town. And so the Power Summit, it's on, y'all. It's on. It'll be Atlanta Technical College, Denard Conference Center, 1560 Metropolitan Parkway. 1516 Metropolitan Parkway. This course is hosted by us, and you, like I said, you can go to our website, usliftingus.com, and I'm quite sure there might be some more vendor opportunities if you're listening, 404-592-2780, 404-592-2780. There might be some more, and so we're going to be talking about, of course, the models of cooperative economic empowerment. That is our Power Summit. Brothers and sisters, we're talking today about African and American African women, black women, their contribution. This is Women's Month, International Women's Month, or Women's Month, March. And my good brother and friend Renoko Rashidi will be joining us in the next few minutes. And of course, quite sure he has a wealth of information. But I picked this particular piece off of the Internet. Some of you may be familiar with this young brother, Home Team. And if you can, go on YouTube, put in Home Team. This brother has presented, I mean, and I'm quite sure Renoko knows this young man. He has put out some outstanding videos, great information on our history and African, ancient African history, done great research, impressed with this young man, has a number. In fact, you probably hear more of Home Team in months to come. Maybe try to connect with him and talk with him personally. That would be a great thing. I love young people who embrace our culture, who embrace our history, and who want to bring it back to us. I love it. I love when that happens. You know, so like I said, we are honoring. You can join the conversation. Remember, the number is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Let's listen to the top five warrior African queens in the history of our people.
Black women have always been at the forefront of any movement or revolution. In fact, I'll go as far and say that without black women, most revolutions or movements wouldn't even happen or function properly. Now, from the outside looking in, some observers may be under the impression that black women have been forced into the role of battle, especially due to the circumstances they've been put under. But upon further observation, it becomes very clear that the ancestors of black women have always been willing participants and even initiators of battle. What up, African world? It's your boy Home Team here. I'm back at it with another video of African history, culture, and worldview. And remember, you guys can support the Home Team banner on Patreon to gain full access to sources and full African history lessons. All you gotta do is check out the link in the description box below. Anyway, today we're gonna talk about the top 5 African warrior queens straight out of the continent. Now, for the longest time, outside observers, aka non-Africans, seem to not only acknowledge but respect the fighting spirit of African women. In more recent times, the French and their interaction with the West African Amazonians, known today as the Dahomey Amazons, wrote about these warriors as having, and I quote, incredible courage and audacity. They weren't there just as props. They bodied other African kingdoms. And the unique thing about African women was not that they were simply fighting in battle, but they also initiated war. Yaa Santowe is a prime example, as she single-handedly started the War of the Golden Stool. Referring to more ancient times, the presence of female African warriors is also noted and even romanticized. The Greeks created legends of Queen Marina and what they called the Candace Queens of ancient Kush. They were astonished that these women would literally participate in battle. Now, this is going to be unique, right? Because these women weren't your ordinary trash-talking warfare initiators. The majority of the following African women you're about to hear from were literally present on the battlefield. In other words, these women were the baddest of the bad. So without further ado, here's the top 5 greatest African queens in the entire history of the continent. Coming in at number 5, we have Princess Yenenga. Now, Princess Yenenga eventually became a queen, but her legend started when she was just a princess. Her father was a king of a region in northern Ghana, and she was said to be the most beautiful girl in all the kingdom. But that wasn't what was unique about her. She was actually hailed as being an excellent horse rider and warrior, a master, if you will, with the bow and spear. She is said to have been a better rider than most of the men, and one of the top warriors in all of the kingdom. She was highly favored in the kingdom, and her father absolutely adored her. But like many women, she wanted to get married, and her father thought to himself, how can I lose such an excellent warrior and leader to marriage? So he refused to allow Princess Yenenga to get married. This pained Princess Yenenga deeply. So to express how she felt, she planted a lush field of wheat, but she didn't take care of it and allowed it to rot. When her father inquired about why she allowed such a beautiful field of wheat to rot, she said, "You see, father, as precious as you say I am, still, you let me rot like the wheat in this field." However, that didn't work, as her father hardened his heart, so she ran away, fighting off foes trying to capture her, and started her own nation. This nation is the region of Burkina Faso today. Princess Yenenga became the queen mother of Burkina Faso and a legendary warrior figure in all of West Africa. Being the queen warrior mother of any nation is why Princess Yenenga is ranked so high amongst all African warrior queens. At number 4, we have Queen Gudi. Queen Gudi is a legendary queen from Ethiopia, believed to be descended from the Sidamo people. Some scholars say that she was of Jewish religion and apparently despised the Christian empire of Aksum. She, according to Aksumite oral and written tradition, was a woman scorned. For whatever reason, she despised the Aksumite dynasty and nearly relinquished the entire genetic line of Aksumite royalty. She is said to have laid waste to Aksum and its countryside, destroying churches and monuments. She killed the emperor and ascended to the throne, reigning pretty much until her death. The Aksumite Empire was a pretty well-established state, and the fact that she utterly ravaged and destroyed it, starting a new line of Ethiopian kings and queens, is very significant. Her actions single-handedly influenced the future of Ethiopia and started a nation. In Ethiopia today, she is known as Esato, literally meaning fire. Breaking our top three, we have Queen Nzinga of Angola. Now I have to admit that I really wanted to rank her higher because she is definitely one of my all-time favorites. Queen Nzinga has a very special place in my heart. With that being said, Queen Nzinga breaks our top three because she was born and bred in fire. Her story is incredible, and there's even been a movie done about her. Since birth, legend has it that the umbilical cord was wrapped around her neck, almost killing her. So from jump, she had to fight for her life. She, like Princess Yanenga, was also favored by her father, and he reportedly took her to battle with him. I mean, everything about this woman from jump screams legendary. Honestly, we would be here all day telling all the stuff this queen has done, as it's well documented. But to sum it up, Queen Nzinga is hailed as not only being a warrior queen, literally being present on the battlefield, but she was a powerful ambassador, demonstrating the ability to manipulate foreign and domestic politics in her favor. She was absolutely brilliant. You see, she wasn't exactly legitimate. Her mother, if we're all honest, was pretty much a side piece to her father, the king. So her entire life, she had somewhat of a struggle for legitimacy. But not only did she get the Portuguese to acknowledge and respect her rule, she also got Mbundu detractors to bow. As long as she was alive, the Portuguese were never able to gain a stronghold over the region. Today, she's recognized and remembered for displaying brilliant political and diplomatic acumen, implementing superb military tactics. One quote that Queen Nzinga left us that ironically sums up her political relationship with the Portuguese is this: "Europeans, you don't know what's good." That speaks volumes concerning her political and militaristic confidence, if you will. Coming in at number two, the second greatest warrior queen of Africa is little known and discussed. Her name is Queen Amina. Now, Queen Amina was a Hausa warrior, queen of Northwest Nigeria. In many ways, Queen Amina is actually similar to Queen Gudi, but two big things seem to separate them. For one, Queen Amina is said to have actually led her troops in battle, conquering many cities like Katsina and Kano. And Queen Amina is also hailed as being a pioneer to her people. Not only was she the greatest female conqueror of West Africa, expanding her territory and forcing others to pay tribute, she is hailed as being the first to establish government among the Hausa people themselves. Leading your troops into battle and being a pioneer for your people are extraordinary characteristics for not only a queen but a warrior that actually fights in battle. And what we've all been waiting for, coming in at number one, the greatest African warrior queen was Queen Amanerinus. Now, Queen Amanerinus was the queen of the ancient kingdom of Kush, with its headquarters believed to be in the ancient city of Meroe. The queens of Kush were probably some of the most popular queens in the ancient world because they were well known for literally fighting in battle. They were known as Kandaki queens, and Queen Amanerinus descended from a long line of them. She is most known for her conflict with Rome, as Rome tried to tax Nubians living in Egypt, which she opposed. The Romans have their account written by Strabo, which obviously favors the Roman perspective. But unfortunately, we don't have the full perspective because Queen Amanerinus has a written account on a stela in Meroitic script, a script that we have difficulty translating. We know in the end that Queen Amanerinus chopped off the head of a statue of Augustus and buried it under her temple as a sign of disrespect, and varying battles taking place that led to a treaty being signed. In this treaty, the Kushites got everything they wanted, including the tax revolt. Her presence on the battlefield was noted, as she is said to have a scarred eye. Her bravery and composure in her conflict with the Romans is legendary, as she protected her people by halting potential Roman ambition in the region. She just wasn't having it, and was apparently ready for anything that came her way. According to legend, Kushite ambassadors in their diplomatic dialogue with the Romans are quoted as bringing a message from the queen. One of the Kushite envoys gallantly presents the Romans a beautiful bundle of golden arrows and said the following words: "This gift is from the Candace. If you want peace, this is a token of her warmth and friendship. If you want war, keep the arrows, because you're going to need them." It seems clear that the Kushites did not appear as beaten foes because of the aggressive message brought to the Romans. That is the most epic response to the most powerful military on earth at the time. Her leadership, guidance, determination, and grit is second to none when it comes to African warrior queens. Well, I'm pretty much all out, guys. If you want full access to all the sources and full African history courses, you can support the Home Team on Patreon.com. The link is in the description box below. It's your boy, Home Team. Know thyself. Remember your ancestors. Peace.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. That is Home Team. And you can go to YouTube and check out Home Team. But more importantly, support him, because I know I will, because I will be using Home Team for information so we can further this knowledge that is out there readily available to us to, you know, to get rid of this ignorance, get rid of this stupidity, get rid of this self-hatred, and to begin to reconstruct and develop our African minds. Because I end the program, as you know, if you listen to this program, every program, with the words of Stephen Biko: the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, because it is the African mind. Once our minds are right, everything else will begin to fall into place. It is our minds. And not only when we get our minds right, our behavior, everything will change. We will have a love of self and a love for each other, a trust and a respect for each other, and that we could do some great things with and for one another. So I'm imploring us to listen to this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. I'm imploring us to go to YouTube, do some search, go to Google, put in information, titles, authors, a subject matter, any and everything that you can do to help free your mind. Because if you can free your mind, because once you freed your mind, your ass will follow. No doubt about it. Brother Felix, miss him. Haven't heard from him in quite some time. Brother Equani, too, remember, haven't heard from him from quite, he must be working or whatever, but there's some good listeners out there. And you can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. You know, the African womanhood here in this country, and there's been some times I think that, you know, we as men haven't supported our sisters as good as we should have, because we've had some great strong women. Some great strong women. Some of them, I just, in fact, on Dr. William Rogers' program this past Saturday. We're talking about Fannie Lou Hamer, you know, and her quote, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired," as she often said. But her greatest quote to me was, "Never forget where you came from and always praise the bridges that carried you over." I mean, I take that to mean personally and us as a people. I'm always talking about the men and women who have brought us this far and praising them, praising Mary McLeod Bethune with a dollar and a half in her pocket and a vision creates Bethune-Cookman College. I'm always praising sisters. I respect women who lead. I respect women leadership. Because, see, one thing that I understand is that in African society, men and women, there was a symbiotic relationship between men and women. They understood they needed each other. They depend on each other. In European society, women were subservient. In European society, it is very hardcore patriarchal. But in African society, in fact, it's somewhat matrilineal because many of the kings or rulers, it is through the woman's line, it's through her lineage that that person will begin his rulership. So we have always respected and honored women. When you look at ancient Kemet, I'm quite sure Brother Renoko can tell you how many actual pharaohs or kings in ancient Kemet that were female. Obviously, the most noted is Queen Hatshepsut, who ruled for 21 years. Who ruled, you know? So we're going to learn about some dynamic women in our history and in our lives, and I'm excited to do so. I just gave you somewhat of a primer, I guess, with Brother Home Team, and please go online to check out Brother Home Team and the information that he provides. You know, but I keep thinking of women locally in Milwaukee. I've always respected women for their leadership, the way they handle their business and so forth, as opposed to, now understand something too, in America, you know, you can find some dogmatic women in politics and other facets of life as well, because it's America. And America does what? America is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And so, you know, only if you know yourself do you not have to partake in that kind of mentality. Do you not have to feel that you got to have while others can't have? And you got to have the best, this, that, and the other. And, of course, you will use violence to that end, to those means. That's what America's about. That's why, as far as I'm concerned, and why I have this program, is so that we can look at that for what it is and not do anything to Caucasians, because we can't. They suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior, and everything that they do is in that mold. And there's nothing that we can do, no matter how much proof, how much fact that stands up to anybody's scrutiny to prove that they're not, but they dismiss it, they ignore it, because it doesn't fit with their mindset of who they are and their right to dominate and control everything. So what do we have to do? We have to purge ourselves of that mindset and begin to love and trust and respect one another, to work with one another, to build for one another, for us as African people. It cannot happen here. It cannot happen on this land. And that's another subject that we'll talk about at a later date. But, sisters, we love you. We respect you. Now, right now, the new mayor is a sister here in Atlanta. Keisha Lance Bottoms is the new mayor here in Atlanta. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Milwaukee when they're trying to find a new mayor after all the madness that they've been going through, problems they've been going through. I wonder how my good sister's doing, Dr. Pat McManus, and who just got the interim position at the health department after all that they've been going through. Support that sister. Give her the best support that you can, brothers and sisters. Because I'm quite sure the pressure was on the mayor, and he wasn't going to do it, but the pressure was on him, and he relented, and so he did it. You know. So, as we prepare for my brother, I want to thank my guest from last week, you know, Sister Okosua, Sister Okosua, and Brother Paul from the UK, and of course, co-host Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix, the Black People's Matrix, the Black People, not Peoples, the Black People Matrix, and you can check that out on that website, dealing with the African mind and how to deal with the African mind. So I want to thank them last week, of course, Baba Akima, and all those who listen and all those who called, my good brothers who have been calling and listening to the program. Want to thank them for doing so, and hopefully they continue to do so. I don't care about, you know, how many people listen. I really don't. If only one person is listening, because regardless, I'm going to be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And if I'm not here, there'll be a program on, of a previous recorded program, or somebody substituting, because this program has to be constant, because we need consistency. We need to be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We need the other programs that are on this network, on Time for an Awakening Media, and all the other programs that are on Black Talk Radio Network, Brother Scotty Reed. We need these programs. We need as much information consistently as we can get it. And we must learn together. I know there's a saying in the Hadith. It says he who puts their foot on the path to seeking knowledge go in the way of God until they return. I say they, because we as African people, men and women, must learn together. We are in this together. We are in this battle together. They who put their foot on the path of seeking knowledge, they go in the way of God until they return. And what it means is you never return, because knowledge is infinite. Nobody knows it all but God. And once you put your foot on that path, God guides you, motivates and inspires you, opens up things, broadens your vision and your horizons. So, dear brothers, put your foot, dear sisters, put your foot on that path to seeking knowledge. You will go in the way of God until you return. But what it means, you never return. You will continue to learn. I'm learning all the time. I hope I have more life in the future. I know I have more behind me than I have ahead of me. That's just being real. And what I do have, I will constantly be learning, reading, watching, listening, participating, particularly if it's about the liberation, self-determination, and sovereignty for African people, because that is the objective of this program. That's, I always say, you know, this program is unapologetically African, but it's also designed to discuss independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. I don't care. I mean, I know there's still so many of us who continue to advocate for voting, who continue to advocate for representation in city government, state government, federal government, who will continue to believe that all of these things must be done, and if they're ever done, we will become equal participants in a society. And brothers and sisters, it hasn't happened. It's not happening now, because it ain't going to happen. And so the most important thing that we can do is close ranks, pool resources and do for ourselves. Do for ourselves. Learn to respect one another, trust one another, build with one another. That's what we can do. I'm looking forward to the next hour, but I'm going to take a break right now. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
What, the Black Nation? I love it. From the day my mom and dad knew me, my color the first. I know last. So it's behind the sash. Africa still remains so fine. Empresses and emperors living from in those times. I know you're the first to give birth and took mankind. Now let me say you'll be hurt, being Omega's divine. You, yeah, take time to die and I give thy praise. That's where my covenant will be always. How have you been going through those things? You've been away for many days. Love, woman, and child. You, yeah, yeah, yeah. You, I really have so much love. Your love is unkind, will fade away. Only you could make time proud. Black woman and child, you, yeah, yeah, yeah. For you, I really have so much love. On your road just to make things great. Oh yeah, you and the children, I see them in front of your face. I say, keep them close as you live, increase their faith. Marcus Garvey don't save him, save the future from us. Oh, 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 naturally nature is the way to your needs. You were born as the one to conceive. Now let my joy put away your grief. You want a child as smooth as the breeze. Woman and child, you, yeah, yeah, yeah. For you I'm coming so much forward. Minds will fade away. They could never put time down. Hey, hey, hey. Love, woman, and child. You, yeah, yeah, yeah. For you I am so much love. Dollar bills and coins will fade away. They would never make I proud alone. One girl standing at your door, just in Ethiopian clothes, coming more and more. Oh, what a lovely day, the blessing is so pure. Someone conceived today, of this I am sure. Yeah, hey, yeah, black woman and child, you, yeah, yeah, yeah. For you have gone so much slower. Dollar bills and fairies will fade away, they never yet make I proud. Oh, 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 black woman and child, you, yeah, yeah, yeah. For you I have so much slower. The never yet make I proud. Say it aloud. Kamala and Africa still remain so fine. Empresses and emperors living from in those times. I know you're the first to give birth and to mankind. Now let me say you'll be heard. Queen Omega's divine. Oh, oh, oh. Take I to Zion, I give high praise. That's where my covenant will be always. How have you been going through those days? Stumbling away for many years, yeah.
This call is being recorded.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Okay, our guest is here, and I'm going to go right into it. I was going to talk about previous program, other programs we have here, but we don't have that much time with him, and I want to take every bit of time that we can with our guest, and it is Brother Baba Rinoka Rashidi. Dr. Rashidi, how are you today?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I played a piece earlier from Home Team. And Brother Home Team is outstanding young man. I don't know if you had a chance to hear some of his presentations on African history.
No, I wasn't able to hear that.
Okay. And he did a thing on the five great African queens, you know, some of them that I knew, of course, like Queen Nzinga, Yaa Santewa, but there was a few other like Nandi, another sister, I can't remember her name right now, but he talked about that. And but Home Team does a lot of good information, and I suggest to my to the people as I'm broadcasting for them to go online to check him out. Just like you can go to YouTube if you want to listen to more of what Dr. Ronoka Rashidi has done and doing and his perspectives. Just go to YouTube, put him in, and then bam, there it is. It's like all the others. You can let the ancestors speak. So there is no need to not know. You know, there's no need to be ignorant of our history, of our culture, and the things that we need to do to help our minds. But we're going to highlight and talk about our sisters, black women, a tribute to black women from black men in antiquity, from ancient times to modern times. And so let's get started, dear brother.
Well, an hour certainly doesn't do it justice. All it does is, I suppose, whet the appetite. And to the brother who spoke previously, that's positive. I think it's very encouraging and inspiring for black men to talk about black women. I feel very defensive about that, in that a lot of our brothers have in essence, abandoned our sisters. And so me, as a secure, heterosexual, alpha male, and a pretty good historian, I think it makes me feel good. It does wonders for my self-esteem to be able to just talk about the importance of black women in history. Of course, when we talk about black women, excuse me, we're talking about the first woman. Recently, there's been a series of, when I say recently, over the last few years, a series of reconstructions from skeletal remains as to what the earliest humans looked like. I'm talking about modern humans now. I'm talking 300,000 to 400,000 years ago. And I believe I've seen about four of them. The oldest one, or perhaps the first one I saw, is called Lucia, speaking of black women. And this is a reconstruction of a skull in the Natural History Museum in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And it's called Lucia after Lucy, the skeletal remains in Ethiopia that we know more properly by the local name, and that is Dinknesh, meaning you are wonderful. But Lucia is important to us because it represents the first person in the Americas. And clearly, the reconstruction is of a black person. The only thing we don't know is whether this black person came directly from Africa or whether this was an Aboriginal Australian South Pacific Islander, still black people. And then you have, around the same time, from BBC, excuse me, a reconstruction of a skull found in Romania. And this skull is 34,000 years old. Clearly black, clearly African. There's no question about that. And then, not long ago, another reconstruction, this time of an entire body of a man from Morocco in Africa who lived 160,000 years ago. Clearly black. And this is important because this is regarded as the first modern human being that we are aware of, Homo sapiens sapiens. And then just two or three weeks ago, a skeletal remain of someone named Cheddar Man. Cheddar is a place in England, and some skeletal remains were found there over 100 years ago. But through DNA analysis, a reconstruction was just done. And it shows that the ancestor of the modern Britons 10,000 years ago was also black. And so my point is, for most of the history of the world, until I would say less than 20,000 years ago, there were only black people on the planet. And so the black woman goes back that far. And then, of course, you start talking about famous black women in history. Now, my brother mentioned, as you recap, people like Yaa Sanchua. You mentioned Nandi and Zynga. I would imagine that some of the great queens from Kemet might have come up in the conversation. But the first woman that I'm aware of whose name we know in history is also a black woman from the Nile Valley. Her name is Night Hotep. Now, those of us who know our history, in terms of Kemet at least, know that Kemet was united, the Southern Kingdom and the Northern Kingdom, what we call Upper and Lower Kemet, Upper and Lower Egypt, around traditionally the date is given us around 3100 BC. And you have a king named Narmer who comes from the southern part of Kemet, whose family conquers the north and inaugurates Egypt of the pharaohs, or dynastic or pharaonic Egypt. Well, we know that he married a woman named Night Hotep. Night is at peace, Night being a female aspect of God in Kemet. And this, to my knowledge, is the first time we have a historic, an actual name of a woman in human history. And like many things, that goes back to Africa. So that's how I would like to start our discussion today.
That's great. Thank you. Because there are so many great women in our history, a lot of them unknown to us because of the fact is that the history that we have been giving, that we have been given, comes from a Eurocentric perspective. And of course, they've always negated who we are as a people, particularly, once again, European culture is very hardcore patriarchal. In fact, they suppress women and they oppress women just like they've done to us. So you're not going to get anything about African women being up in the forefront. I mentioned earlier, prior to you coming on, about the African in Kemet who were pharaohs, not just Queen Hatshepsut, which is well known in her 21-year reign has a pharaoh, but there are other sisters who took the rulership. Is that correct?
Yeah, it would appear that way. Hatshepsut is the clearest one. Before we talk about that, and I do want to discuss that, let me ask you, who is the woman, or is there a woman besides your mother, that stands out to you most in history? And to be more precise, to narrow it down, in ancient history. And then we'll talk about women in Kemet. I'm curious to get your response about that.
I guess for me, when you talk about ancient history, the women who were really strong, who were warriors, like an Nzinga, you know, I admire them tremendously. That's why when I saw the Black Panther movie and his Black Panther's guard, which of course are the sisters, and I think of strong women who, regardless of the situation, were confident that they could, you know, who were confident that they could have a positive outcome through their efforts, whatever that might be, as in rulership and war and so forth. So that's what I look at. Also, too, I've always been respectful of women leadership. In fact, when I was in the NAACP back in the early 80s, you know, the president was a female. I was the vice president. I supported her. I respect and support women leadership when it is right.
You don't feel threatened and intimidated by that?
Not at all. Not at all. No, brother, I don't. I don't, you know, even in the fire service, you know, when women have taken positions, I've really never had a female officer on a steady basis, nor even as a battalion chief. There are some now, I guess, but I haven't been in the fire service in quite some time. But no, I respect women leadership. I respect those sisters who rise to the occasion, you know. Brother, we have a phone call. Can we take a caller?
Why not?
All right. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. 414.
Hey. Oh, yeah. Hey, what's up, OG?
Hey, my Doctor. Brother.
All right. I'm just tuning in, man. I'm on the treadmill. Keep it in.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Black Temple, right?
I hear you. Well, go ahead. Well, if you just want to listen, but if you have a question, go ahead.
Yeah. No, man, I don't have a question yet. I just entering the
okay.
conversation.
All right. Well, go ahead and listen, my brother. I appreciate you.
I'm a listening Glenn.
All right. Peace to you. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's in that case, let's begin our survey of great women in the Valley of the Nile. I'll continue that. Now, we've already talked about Night Hotep, who comes to us more than 5,000 years ago, and you've mentioned Hatshepsut, who we could talk about in a moment, but also in the first dynasty. A dynasty is a royal family. In the first royal family in Kemet, there is mention of a woman named Merneit, Mer-Neit. Now, Night, again, we hear the name again, was a very important female aspect of God in the first dynasty of Kemet, and probably going back into what we would call the pre-dynastic period. And it's argued that Merneit was actually a pharaoh herself. We don't know for certain, but we do know that she was very, very, very prominent. There's a large royal tomb for her that's been found in Kemet. I'll be taking a group back to Kemet, God willing, in November this year, and I'm just thinking there's so much to see there. You know, we've been there, we've seen a lot, more than most people ever will in a lifetime. And yet I read about these reports and these discoveries, and I realize there's so many areas that I have not seen, that the history is so vast. Now, the next really, for me, prominent woman in the history of Kemet, and we don't hear much about her until well over 2,000 years after her death, and this is the woman named Kredonk, K-H-R-E-D-O-U-N-K-H. I think I'm spelling it correctly. And this is the mother of Imhotep. Imhotep, of course, comes in the third dynasty, and this is at the beginning of the great age of pyramid building. He is an architect, a poet. He's the world's first scientist. Many things have been attributed to him, but we also know that when he is deified around 600 BC or so, his mother is deified as well. So we have Kredonk in the third dynasty. We see images of black women in Kemet in dynasties 4, 5, and 6. For example, the mother of Khufu, the great pyramid building, the wife of Sneferu. I think her name is pronounced Hetepheris, is also a very, very important woman. And then you go to the 11th dynasty. The 11th dynasty, which is the beginning of the Middle Kingdom, the second golden age, you do have prominent women who feature as the wives, the great royal wives of Imhotep II, and they are also apparently high priestesses of Hetheru, the female aspect of God, who is also called the Queen of Heaven. And it may be the first time we hear the name Heaven mentioned in the history of the world. Hetheru is called the Queen of Heaven, the Golden One. And then you have at the end of the 12th dynasty what appears to be another female monarch, a pharaoh, a woman named Sebek-Neferah. This would take us to about 1700 BC. And then, of course, the next time you hear about great, great, great black women in the Valley of the Nile, it's in the 17th and 18th dynasties with the liberation struggle to expel the Hyksos and the power of black women in Dynasty 18, of which Hatshepsut was the most important example, but not the only example.
And she ruled for 21 years.
Yes, she did. It started off, she is the daughter of a king, Thutmose I, and she is the wife of a king, Thutmose II. But Thutmose II apparently dies at a fairly young age. Kemet had just undergone the period called the Age of National Humiliation. That was the period where the Hyksos, the foreign invaders of Africa, occupied Kemet for over 100 years, about a century, perhaps more. And they expelled them, the Africans did. Just a moment, my brother, let me deal with the sound.
Okay, thank you. Also, too,
I'm having some construction work done. I apologize, the workers came a bit early.
Okay.
So at any rate, you have this period called the Age of National Humiliation, and the Chemites had put the Hyksos out of the country. Normally, the person that would have risen to the throne is the nephew of Hatshepsut, a man named Thutmose III, a mighty militarist, but he was only a little boy at the time. So the plan was for Hatshepsut to rule the country until Thutmose III came into what we call his majority, his manhood, and Hatshepsut would have been the regent. But she, once she was given the power, came up with the story that her father was actually God Amun, who had come down from the heavens and impregnated her mother, Amos. And therefore Hatshepsut had a kind of a divine right to rule. And this was her justification. We know a lot about her because of the magnificent mortuary temple built, designed by the man named Sinemut. And this is the big temple at Deir el-Bari. But Hatshepsut is certainly a role model, or should be a role model, for Africans, including African women in particular. And she actually reigned as a king. That was a part of her title, the Mighty King. But she never lost her femininity. Even before her, you have in the 17th dynasty a woman named Tetesheri, who is very active in the liberation struggle and considered a queen mother. And you have other women, too. There's a woman named Ahotep. There's another woman named Amos. These are very powerful women. And perhaps the most powerful of them all is Amos Nefertari, who is the co-foundress of the 18th dynasty, which has been called the greatest royal family to ever mount a throne. Now, this sister and her son, Amenhotep I, actually built a city for the workers of the Theban necropolis, the Waset necropolis, the city of the dead in Luxor on the west bank of the Nile. They built a city for the workers. And as a result of that, 200 years after their death, they were more or less deified by those workers, a cult of Amos Nefertari, and her son Amenhotep I was developed, and it lasted for hundreds of years after their death. And in these cult images, for lack of a better word, we're using this European terminology, but the cult images of Amos Nefertari show her consistently as black, and black, as we know in Kemet, denoted deification and divinity.
Right.
So it's really a fascinating story, and I tell you, this the process of talking about it makes me want to start to write an essay about it. It is Women's History Month, and it's always Black People's Month, as far as I'm concerned.
I say.
So I could easily be inspired from this program to actually go and write a nice essay, an original essay, on the history of women in the ancient world, African women, and particularly in the Valley of the Nile. So you've inspired me, brother.
I say. Make it happen, Doc. Make it happen, Baba. You know, there are other women in antiquity, and I know you either have a book or wrote a book or co-authored a book with Dr. Ivan von Cernima, Women in Antiquity, African Women in Antiquity.
Well, actually, the book is Black Women in Antiquity.
Ah, okay. And
I believe it went through three editions. It was first published, my how time flies, around 1982 or so.
Oh, wow.
Now, I had written in a publication for Dr. Van Cernima called the Journal of African Civilizations, which you well remember. And in that book, I did an article on the African presence in ancient Sumer in Iran. I'm sorry, Sumer and Elam, Iraq and Iran.
Okay.
And Ivan liked it. And after that, he proposed to do another book, an anthology, called Black Women in Antiquity. And somehow or another, I ended up writing a long essay that is still being used on called African Goddesses, Mothers of Civilization. But I helped edit that book, and there were several chapters on great black women. There's a chapter on Queen Tai, also from the 18th dynasty. There's a chapter, I think largely kind of poetry, by Sonia Sanchez on Nefertiti, who is a controversial figure in world history and African history. I'm sure, if I recall properly, there must have been an essay on Nzinga. Dr. Rosalind Jeffries did something on African art or images of African art. And there were Charles Finch, and who I consider one of our greatest scholars, and Obadeli Williams, who's an ancestor, did an article on the great queens of Ethiopia. So it's not like this information is new. It feels good, however, to celebrate it and to talk about it. And as brothers, I think, again, it adds a special note for us to be able to securely, without being diminished in our sense of our own manhood, to talk about great Black women, ancient as well as modern. And then outside of Egypt, you have figures like, for example, in Ethiopia, the woman named Makeda, the famous Queen of Sheba.
Queen of Sheba, yes.
And in North Africa, you have a woman from Algeria named Al-Kahina, who I just left Morocco last month. I led a group there. From now on, at least for the foreseeable future, I intend to do an African History Month, a Black History Month tour in Africa itself. Instead of just being in the United States, I'm actually going to start the month in the motherland. So this year, I took a group to Morocco, and I talked to the tour guide, and we both talked about a woman named Al-Kahina. Now, Al-Kahina is what Al-Kahina, Al-Kahina, was a Berber woman. And the word Berber is what the Arabs call the people of Northwest Africa. Now, some of these Berbers I met were Black, obviously. And I think that they are the descendants of the same people who sent civilization to Spain under the guise of the Moors. But there are other Berbers who are not Black, and I don't know where they come from. Anyway, Al-Kahina was a Berber woman. I'm going to assume that she was a sister. And she is important to us because she led the resistance to the Arab invasions of North Africa in the 7th century. So you have a whole series of women in Africa whose names we should really celebrate.
No doubt. And to me, that's really important so we can understand the connection of how we as African people have evolved over periods of time. It's important that we recognize these brothers and sisters, you know, and that we begin to celebrate them. We begin to acknowledge them and celebrate them for their constant contributions to the forward flow of our history, you know.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
You know, there was some, I know that we're, you know, when you mentioned Queen Nefertiti, and I know that there's some controversy, like that bust that was found in Britain, in Germany, of Nefertiti, you know, and that I think now could obviously argue that it was a forgery, it was a fake. You know, Nefertiti was supposed to be the wife of, Nefertiti's wife of Amenhotep, Akhenaten, yes, or Amenhotep III, or changed his name to Akhenaten, and who is the mother of Tutankhamun, correct?
I'm not sure who Tutankhamun's mom is. I've never attributed his mother to be Nefertiti.
Okay.
Now, what I gather, Akhenaten and Nefertiti had 9 daughters. And somehow, just within the last years or so, Akhenaten is no longer regarded as what I'd always thought was the father. The older brother of Tutankhamun is now regarded as the father of Tutankhamun. I don't know if I accept that position, but I've never seen anything that would say that Nefertiti was Tutankhamun's mother.
Okay.
But Nefertiti has always been a mysterious figure in African history. When I was coming up, and I'm talking about reading about her in the 70s and 80s, coming up under people like Dr. Ben and John Henry Clark and LeGrand Clegg and others, Asa Hilliard, the great Asa Hilliard, they seem to think that the bust of Nefertiti was a fake. and that Nefertiti herself, as I recall it, wasn't really a black woman, and she was a foreigner. She, at that time, was usually identified as being a queen of the people called the Mitanni, who apparently were kind of a mysterious group of people in ancient Western Asia. And I kind of accepted that and never thought of Nefertiti as a sister. But in hindsight, it could be that European Egyptologists have dubbed her as a foreigner because they want to take as much out of Africa as possible.
Right.
And the idea that the person that some regard as the most beautiful woman in the ancient world could have been African was may have been repulsive to them. This is the logic that I'm following.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, she's been identified as a foreigner. But I do believe that the bust, the famous bust of her in Berlin, that the Germans called the Beauty of Berlin, is definitely a fake. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah. And but when sometimes, Brother Baba Renoko, when it has been stated over and over again, even though when the truth comes out, still the lie prevails, you know?
Well, this is true. This is true.
Yeah. Because even today, you know, in fact, I saw a piece in an article that still mentions that bust as being real, and that fact that this was the most beautiful woman in the world at that time, of course, or ever. and of course, it looks European. It looks Caucasian. You know.
Certainly, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But one thing is for sure, we need to do a lot more research.
Right.
You know, we say all the time, and when I say we, I'm speaking generally, that we've been lied to, we've been bamboozled, we've been sold a bill of goods about our history, and all of that's true. But actually, whose job is it for us to know our history?
Ours.
We seem to have laid the delusion or illusion that Europeans should be honest about our history, they should write African history from a favorable perspective, and we're disappointed, distraught, dismayed when we see that that's not the case. So, you know, really it just reinforces the idea that it's our job to know about our history and to write about our history, or as I've been saying lately, to claim it and proclaim it without apology, without stuttering, without stammering, without any of that. And so all this just means that, as you pointed out earlier and reinforced it, ignorance is a choice. The information is there. Now, we can dig it up, or we can keep complaining that white folks have lied to us. I would rather devote that energy to digging up our history so that we know exactly who Nefertiti was. And we don't have to rely upon other people as an information source. That is our job and our responsibility, and it's something that we're definitely capable of.
And that's why, to me, warrior scholars such as yourself need to be acknowledged and need to be read or need to be listened to. You know, all of the brothers and sisters who, I mean, you know, I think about Drusilla Dungy Houston, who wrote the book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire, and her most profound dynamic quote. She says, out of archaeology, ethnology, paleontology, as well as history, I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal that Howard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race dare not refute. And to me, the most profound part of the quote is, how can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? You know, and she wrote that at the same time that Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week in 1926. So this information has been out there, and yet the leadership that we have had is ignorant of our history. Jesse and Al and all the other ones, the organizations, even the fraternities and sororities, you know, calling themselves Greek. That information was plagiarized from us. The masonry, all that is ours. And yet, you know, we going through these practices, you know, thinking that it's European, and of course we want to be like the Europeans.
Well, I think that what we have to do somehow is create an excitement about knowledge of self and the importance of knowledge of self. And it can be done. You know, I think this excitement around this film, Black Panther, which astonishes me. I'm really, really surprised about that film on many levels. But it tells us, among other things, that the desire to have pride in oneself, to believe that we come from a people who gave something of significance to the world, that desire burns deep in us. And we may acknowledge or suppress that, but it's real.
Right.
And that movie, I think, is the clearest example of that. Sometimes people ask, why is history important? And I ask myself that. Sometimes we have to really go and just try to address the basics again and again and again. We need that. And in the days that we live in, so perilous, you know, so full of tension and strife and oppression, we see it every day coming out of the White House in particular, we have to ask ourselves why knowledge of the past is so important. Now, one thing I think that virtually every Black person agrees with, and notice I said virtually, is the need for unity. I think we all pretty much say we need to unite. Black people must unite. But what is the basis of that unity beyond phenotype and beyond, you know, degrees of oppression? And I think that history and knowledge of self is a part of that, that all people want to feel proud of themselves. All people want to be able to lift their heads and poke out their chest and say with pride, I come from a people who did something, who gave something to the world, that our history spans beyond enslavement. And so I think that we need to really tap into that cord. And I would think that even people like some of the people that you named, you know, that that could be a link, that that could be a common denominator. Now, it's clear, too, that the talented 10th, I don't know if they are in a position or even in a desire to lead in the struggle for knowledge of self. And that's why I think organizations like ASCAC became so important at the time that they did, because ASCAC represented a broad cross-section of people in the community who had pride in African heritage, who understood the importance of history. Now, I think that we can learn from that.
Yeah.
And of course, going back to our central theme, the role of African women in that history is also very, very inspiring. You have other sisters who obviously played important roles in African liberation and African struggles that we need to research. What about the Black women in ancient Carthage, for example? We don't hear anything about the great African women that surely must have existed in ancient Zimbabwe. Even beyond Nzinga herself, who comes at a different phase in history, there are Black women whose names we need to know more about. For example, there's a sister that Nzinga may have been related to named Dona Beatrice, I believe is her name, another important African freedom fighter in Central Africa several hundred years ago, not from antiquity, but during a phase in history that is equally important. So all of that shows the importance of research and, as Chancellor Williams said, the tasks that lie ahead of us.
And that's where we must meet that challenge. And that's why it's important that we need to support, particularly you, because of the primary research that you're doing and those individuals who do primary research. You know, you physically go to where that history is and to document it. And you have documented the African presence around the globe for decades. And what you've also done is send back beautiful pictures of sisters around the world, man. Beautiful sisters from around the world. And it seems like, too, Baba, is that the deeper we dig, or the more deeper the research, the more Black it is. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's what I've been trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And this information about this DNA analysis and reconstruction, you know, just reaffirms that. It's kind of not astonishing, But it's interesting that everything that we learn about world history, ancient history, going all the way back as far as we can, just seems to reinforce the idea that, again, for much of the world, for much of history, the world was literally a black planet. And virtually all of the ancient technologies come out of Africa. There's an article, some kind of scientific journal just published, about how I could even find it before we get off the air, that they found a 100,000-year-old ochre manufacturing factory or something like that, where ochre was used in art. I guess it must have been extracted some kind of way. I want to dig the article up. 100,000 years old in southern Africa. And we find these kinds of things more and more and more. 75,000 years old for this. A 47,000-year-old mine found in southern Africa. The earliest known example of mathematics found in southern Africa, 37,000 years old. And also, a lot of these finds are in southern Africa.
Right.
I'm not sure if that means that southern Africa is older than we thought, or it's just that the climate of southern Africa allows for the preservation of artifacts that would not have been preserved in the more tropical environment of Central Africa around the Great Lakes region. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that possibly more research of that type, archaeological, paleontological research, is being done in southern Africa. But it's exciting, the times that we're living in, because we, in a sense, are living in a new age of discovery. And what we're discovering is ourselves. And for the people that you call warriors, warrior scholars such as yourself, obviously we consider it an absolute requirement that we get out on the front line. If the frats and the established black leadership and the church and the sororities aren't giving this information out, then those of us in the conscious community have to work doubly hard to see that this information is as widely disseminated as possible.
Ashe, and that's what we must do, because believe me, they're not going to do it. You know, I'm just keeping it real. I think that a lot of that leadership is bought and sold. They have, you know, in fact, they still believe in what was happening in the past, that we should be ashamed of who we are, that we never really created a creative contribution to the world. In fact, many of those brothers and sisters, their mindset is that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, waiting for Europeans to come help civilize us. In fact, some of those Negroes even will say, I'm glad for slavery, because it took us out of Africa, out of that primitive state, and exposed us to Western ideology and Western concept and Western religion. You know, and it's just that deep, and it's just that sad. But we have to understand how this happened. These brothers and sisters didn't come to that themselves. They were impacted by a system of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. And of course, they believe that system. They believe in it. And they believe that they too can be a part of that system, that they will be treated equitably and fairly in that system. And of course, we know that is not the case. And so they are afraid to embrace that which is African. And because they are ashamed of it, and they've been made to feel ashamed of it, you see. And so we have a lot of work to do, Baba, a lot of work to do.
Now, one of the things that I'm doing right now is I teach classes, special classes on Facebook on Friday evenings, my online courses. And I do 3 or 4 a year. And one of the things, the one that we're doing right now is a history of the African presence in the Americas. And it's a broad course, obviously, because we look at it from the beginnings, the earliest settlement of people of African heritage in the Americas, all the way to the Black Power movement. Now, this week, coming up, we're going to talk about that terrible crime against humanity called the transatlantic slave trade. And then for the 2 weeks after that, we're going to talk about resistance to enslavement, because certainly we don't want to see ourselves as only victims. We don't want to diminish the suffering of our ancestors, but we did more than suffer. In terms of the resistance movement, I'm also working on a new book. I give myself a year to do it. And this would be African women freedom fighters in the Americas during the age of enslavement and oppression. And so I've been able to single out about a dozen sisters who were very, very active, whose names most of us have not heard of. For example, there's Marie Angelique. Marie Angelique was an enslaved African woman who tried to burn old Montreal to the ground. I mean, not a house or neighborhood or a building. This sister attempted to burn old Montreal down. You have the woman named Solitude, or Solitude the Brave. Now, this is an African woman, perhaps the result of rape on the ships bringing us over here, who participated and who herself became pregnant, and who fought in the liberation struggle in Guadeloupe. Now, the struggle in Guadeloupe is the same time as the Haitian Revolution, which is famous. And it was led by a brother named Louis Delgray. But this sister named Solitude was very active in the struggle, and she was captured and kept alive until the day the baby was born. And then she was executed by the French. I assume that what they wanted to do, they were so ruthless that they wanted to keep the child so that they would have another slave. Mm. It's really, I mean, you could say it's based on humanitarian concerns, but European oppression being what it is, what it has been.
Right. There's
they
nothing
kept
humanitarian
a woman alive
about it.
Just so she could bear another slave, more
right.
property.
Right.
So you have a sister in Martinique named Lumina Sophie. The French call her Surprise. Another African freedom fighter in Martinique in the 19th century. And the list is long. Of course, we have people like Carlotta Lukumi, an enslaved African woman who attempted to lead a revolt in Matanzas province in Cuba in 1843. And so my point is, in addition to the great African women, the queen of ancient times, and even people like Nzinga and Dona Beatrice in Central Africa, you also have, obviously, African women like Harriet Tubman and so many others who played pivotal roles in the liberation struggles in more recent times, in the 19th century, and even earlier than Nanny of the Jamaican Maroons.
Right.
Mary Ellen Pleasant, the black businesswoman who financed John Brown's raid on Harpers Ferry, Virginia, the African-American sister. So many of these sisters who are very, very important. And then obviously in more recent times, we find others. We find people not just like Coretta Scott King and Betty Shabazz, but Fannie Lou Hamer.
Yeah.
And Ella Baker. And Queen Mother Moore. And then even in more recent times, your sister, our sister in ASCAC, in Nzinga, who bears the namesake.
That's right.
You have the women who became known to the world through the film Hidden Figures, African-American women, African women scientists. So, you know, over the weekend, last weekend, a weekend before last, in Washington, D.C., I did a program with Gail Hansberry, who was the daughter
wow.
of the great pioneer scholar William Leo Hansberry and the first cousin of Lorraine Hansberry, who wrote Raisin in the Sun.
Right.
And the next day, Saturday in Philadelphia, I did a program around Miss Harriet Robinson. She's the wife and widow of Ed Robinson, the brother who did the book, one of the brothers who did the book, Journey of the Songhai People. So we have a history of great black women in terms of antiquity, as freedom fighters, and we're surrounded by great black women today. Our mothers, our wives, our sisters, our daughters, our grandmothers who have made it possible, our aunties, our teachers, who have influenced us in a direct way and make it possible or made it possible for us to be here to have this conversation today and talk about their beauty, their majesty, their grace, their brilliance, their strength, and their resistance.
And you know, I noticed that you never, I mean, for you, I'm one of your followers on Facebook. You never miss the opportunity to say something positive and beautiful about our sisters. So it doesn't have to be March or it doesn't have to be any season. You do it consistently and consciously. And I applaud you. I respect you for that because I believe that, you know, in European development, in how they had to develop, you know, the woman was an object. And there was never any equality for women. Number one, because of the harsh environment, she had to acquiesce to the situation. Because, you know, if he kicked her out of the cave or whatever, into that dark, cold night of animals and whatever, she just couldn't deal. So she just had to acquiesce to the man. But in Africa, there was a symbiotic relationship developed. Because if the man acted a fool, she knows she could take her and her kids or whatever and just gone down the road. There was food, there was shelter, there was water, there was whatever she needed to sustain herself. But in the Europe, in that icebox, that wasn't the case. And so that symbiotic relationship that was developed gained a respect for womanhood and respect for manhood. We work together. We need each other. But as you can see here, because of the enslavement process, we are at each other consistently. You have 70% of our children being born with the father not taking the responsibility to help raise that child. We have all kinds of other malaise that we have because of our situation here, which is not good for us, and particularly not good for our women, because American Europeans are very hardcore patriarchal. They're very dominating, you know, and as a consequence, you know, we act in that way too, even on the continent because of colonization. You know, European culture is a lot very violent and rape culture. We didn't have a lot of rape going on prior to Europeans coming into the continent and colonizing the continent, but you see it today, you know? So, I mean, this whole thing with Europeans in our lives has been very disastrous, you know, and particularly for our women, you know? And then when you read about our captivity and the fact that we were forced to mate. In fact, Francis Cress Welsing says that's where the word motherfucker came from, you know. And I mean, I don't know about that, but I would say this. You know, we can look at the, as Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history. And based on that history, and I hope that it is objective, we can come up with the conclusions and we can come up with the determinations and the direction that we need to go. Look at the history. You see?
Oh, I fully agree. I fully agree. So I salute you for what you've been trying to do. And this is just our moment in time. Some people talk about how, and they're accurate, that we don't have to confine our knowledge of Black history to February. But certainly we take advantage of every opportunity that we can to talk about the history of African people, to talk about the history of women. You know, we do everything we can by any means necessary, you know, to lift our people up, to reinforce a sense of pride and dignity. And we have to find more creative ways, as I said, to disseminate this information. Because I think the people, unfortunately, who need it the most are not the people who are listening to this show. But what we can do is give to the people who are listening to this show the ammunition, you know, with which they can take to disseminate on a broader scale. Everybody can't do everything, but everybody can do something.
That's right.
And I think that the ancestors have given us all a mission or a task. And I think it's up to us whether we attempt to rise to the occasion and fulfill that mission and complete that task. I, for one, don't intend to flunk it, and I know I speak for you and many others who feel exactly the same.
I say, and you're most correct, Baba, because, you know, I will try my best, and I've dedicated my adult life to raising the consciousness of our people, you know, because I clearly understand that if we knew better, we do better. But of course, yeah, in this society, a lot of us don't want to know, because that would have to cause a change in attitude and behavior. And there's some of us who just, you know, they just don't want to know. That's fine. But for those who do, the information is there for you. You know, if you don't want to read, which I hope that you do, because reading broadens your vision. In fact, the young people I used to work with, Baba, I always told them the most important thing that you can do is learn to read with comprehension and understanding. The most important thing that you can do, period, is learn to read. Because once you read, and particularly what you read, will inspire you and motivate and guide you. It's just like when I went to Ghana, I read about Ghana. I read about the things that I would probably inquire with Kwame Nkrumah's tomb or going to Du Bois' memorial and so forth. And so when I got there, you know, and having read all of that, I knew exactly what I was looking at. You know, I knew exactly where I was, and it was inspiring, you know. So although a lot of us don't read, particularly now because they've made it very easy for us not to. So, hey, if you want to learn more, you want to listen, go to YouTube or Google a scholar's name or important person in our history's name, you know. But go to YouTube. You can hear, you can let the ancestors speak on you. You can hear Marcus Garvey on YouTube. You know, and of course you can hear Baba Renoka Rashidi on YouTube and what he has been doing. And believe me, my first time I heard you was on LeGrand Clegg's DVD on Ancient Kemet, you know. And then, of course, your involvement with ASCAC and my involvement with ASCAC. And by the way, I mentioned it earlier that ASCAC's meeting is in Philadelphia this weekend. ASCAC's meetings in Philadelphia this weekend. And this is what I've stated about ASCAC, Baba. I said, and I've stated this on the floor of the conference, that ASCAC should develop itself to be the educational arm for our liberation. ASCAC should do what European Jews have done, even though they may send their children to a public school or even a private school. But They send their kids to learn, you know, math and English and so forth. But the culture information, the cultural information is done by them. The knowledge of themselves is done by them. And that's what we should do. ASCAC should develop a curriculum that we, on a weekend or whatever day, in churches, centers, Boys and Girls Club, whatever, that we study. It's just like the Baptist Church. There's a study in the Baptist Church on Sunday school, the Sunday school lesson. And whatever the day is, that's the lesson that's going to be taught around the country. And I'm quite sure we could do that, and we need to do that. We need to do that not just for our young people, but we need to do that for the parents and the grown folks. We need to do that. We need the information that is going to help us get us out of this madness, get us out of this situation. And that's why
I agree.
And that's why I applaud you for what you're doing with your series, you know. And I applaud you for the many times that you have taken our brothers and sisters to show them physically, visibly, the evidence of African greatness. You know, I know when sometimes I used to do a libation, I would say, what I'm talking to you about is not fairy tale, is not allegory, is not myth. It is based upon scholarly research by our scholars and our historians. It is factual. It is verified, it's bona fide, you know. And to me, when Dr. Sheikh Anta Jop and Dr. Thelafili Obinga went to that conference, that symposium in Cairo in, was that 1974, 74, 75? Yeah. And they argued persuasively. And, of course, the smoking gun was the development of the melanin dosage test. And it's because of the melanin dosage test that you could take the melanin out of the mummies and determine the amount of melanin that would be in them. And it clearly showed that they were African. They clearly showed that they were black, you know. And so even though, you know, the debate has been won, of course, Caucasians suffer from cognitive dissonance. You know, they believe in their superiority, and if anything that was done of any consequence or significance, they did it. You know, they take credit for it. But the reality is that it was us. It was ours. But yet, you know, they still learn to co-opt stuff. But, you know, so to me, the information is there. The work has been done. We just need to reclaim, recapture it, and restore it and use it as a liberation tool for us as a people. And not just here in America, but throughout the world, throughout the African world, you know, because the European has done such a damn good job of distorting the image of African people. Just as Dr. John Henry Clark said, globally, we have no friends. We have no friends. You want a friend? You want a friend? Go look in the mirror and don't leave that mirror until you like what you see. Not how your eyebrows are arched or the shape of your nose or cheekbones. No, like who you see culturally, historically, and like who you see for us as a people. And that's what we need to do.
I agree. And that sounds like a good way for us to end our segment this morning.
Yes, I really do appreciate it. I hope that we can have other times together. We'll work that out to get you on this program. We'll do better promotion. I did send out a lot of information, and I'll continue to do so. I appreciate you. You know the relationship that I've had with you over the many years that we've known each other and the respect that I have for you, you know. And I know that what you could bring and to help get your word out from this platform, I'm definitely willing to do. So I look forward to, you know, working with you in the future on other information that you can provide the listeners, because, man, believe me, it is a wealth. Although, you know, to go to one of your presentations is a lot better because of all the pictures that you have taken of everywhere you have gone. And like I said, you have visibly documented the African presence, you know, everywhere around the world. In fact, when you say, oh, this, I took this picture in this place, and you think to yourself, you know, wow, I've never seen, you know, any African people, any dark-skinned people in that location, like in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, or whatever. I never seen any, or in Thailand, you know. But we have to understand that European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon. It's global, you know. And so what countries want to show the world is the light, bright, and damn near white, you know, because the idea of somebody being dark, you know, is vilified, is relegated to a lower class. And I know you've done some good work in India, you know. In fact, you've said, I've heard you say that you feel there's more Africans in India, because it's been said there's more Africans in Brazil than any country except Nigeria. But you're saying there's even more Africans in India. Is that correct?
I'm saying that we need to reexamine our definition for what an African is. If all humanity emerges from Africa, and for most of the history of the world, only black people existed, then I think that we, in other words, we need to reexamine everything from a historical perspective. And that is what I try to do. Let me, before we go, at least give my contact information
sure, please.
Out if
please.
People want to follow up. You can always call me after the show at area code 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. Email me as best. That's Runoko@hotmail.com. RUNOKO at hotmail.com. And you can always go to my website, which is drrunoko.com, drrunoko.com. But Brother Oshie, I appreciate you. Have a wonderful day. Keep on doing the good work, and I look forward to doing another installment.
I will look forward to it too, brother. Thank you so much. You've been listening to African Hotep. Perspective, Hotep. This program ends like we did in all our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful day.